Hello and welcome to the podcast summary of the ISB board meeting held on the 20th to 24th of July 2010. My name's Mark Byatt. I'm joined today by Steve Cooper, board member of the ISB, and Alan Teixeira, Director of Technical Activities. Alan, perhaps we could start with yourself, covering off the main topics discussed during board week. I believe insurance was discussed.
Yes, on Monday we had a session on insurance. It was a fairly lengthy one, but the good thing is it wrapped up the rest of the project for us in terms of our technical decisions. And that means that we covered what we call sweep issues, and they were just small issues that had come up during the drafting process. And that means the team is at the moment preparing the final ballot draft, and that means it's a formal process for us where we put a draft in front of the board, they actually formally vote on it, and we expect to publish our exposure draft at the end of this week.
Okay, thank you. Steve, perhaps you could talk a little bit about the leases project.
Yes, we had a number of sessions on leases during the week and wrapped up a number of areas in preparation for publishing the ED over the next week or so. And but the key one, I guess, was the lessor accounting, and when the two alternative approaches for lessor accounting should be applied, the so-called performance obligation and then the derecognition approach, or more strictly the partial derecognition approach. The board spent a long, long while over this with quite strongly held views about the merits of each of these two approaches. Some people would use one for all leases, other people would use the alternative. The two boards have different views, the individual board members, I should say. Our constituents have quite strongly held views on this as well. And this has been a real problem during the whole process of deliberation. I have we have, though, managed to come together on this and find some common ground. And it's based around a so-called hybrid approach, where we would use each of the two methods under different circumstances. The idea is that under the derecognition approach, effectively the right of use that's granted to the lessee represents a transfer of part of an asset to that lessee, and therefore we would derecognize that part and just leave a residual for the lessor. Effectively, it becomes a receivable and a residual. Performance obligation approach, the concept behind that is that control of the asset hasn't passed to the lessee, And what you have is effectively continuous performance over the period of lease. So there's a conceptual issue there, but there's also a practical problem, because for some leases the derecognition approach seems to work well, and for others it doesn't seem to work quite so well. Anyway, we've come up with an approach which is based upon the whole concept of risk and who really has the asset risk associated with the underlying asset. So in situations where the transaction really looks like financing, we would use the derecognition approach. Asset risks have been transferred to the lessee. In situations where asset risks haven't really been transferred, then we believe the performance obligation approach is the preferable one. So we've ended up with a basis for doing the split. It kind of reflects the underlying business model of somebody providing finance versus somebody providing services associated with that asset. So that'll be written up by the staff, and the board will finalise the words, and it will be in the exposure draft that will be published, as I said, fairly shortly.
Yeah, so the sort of thing is, if you've got somebody who leases out one asset multiple times and perhaps their business model is to lease that asset over and over, in that sort of situation it's going to be more like the performance obligation, isn't it? Because they're not transferring that asset to the other party.
That's the idea. And then conversely, where you have essentially a financing type transaction, so a bank that purchases an item of equipment and leases it essentially over the full useful life, and the bank is really taking credit risk as aside from asset risk, then we would use the derecognition approach. As I say, some people think that one or other of those two approaches is applicable to all leases. But I think the board's come to more of a pragmatic solution, looking at really the underlying information that is provided and when each of the two approaches would be useful.
Yeah. And of course, we're looking at now, we're in the process, our staff are writing up all of these decisions because we've completed the decision-making process, and we expect to have, in fact, what we call a pre-ballot draft, which is we go through a couple of processes with our drafting to make sure we get the highest quality standard we can. that will be out in the hands of our board at the end of this week, and we're looking to get a document out as a formal public document in the week of the 9th of August.
Okay, all right, that's helpful, thank you. Alan, perhaps you could carry on by talking about rate-regulated activities.
Yeah, well, this is it's a very sensitive issue. A lot of jurisdictions, particularly in North America, have got what we call rate-regulated activities. And what essentially happens is that they're involved in industries where they're very strongly regulated, and it involves sort of pricing mechanisms whereby if you're supplying something, you know, it could be electricity, and you may actually be regulated in terms of what price you can charge. Some cases you potentially what we could say undercharge in 1 year, you're allowed to charge more in the following year to get that back. And the question that comes up is whether or not the fact that these regulations give you the right to charge extra amounts generates an asset for you, or the opposite, where you're required to charge a low amount in a particular period, whether that generates a liability. They're fairly strongly held views. We found when we put a proposal out in the form of an exposure draft, the feedback was very divided, and I think our board discussions reflect that as well, and that our board is quite divided. It's not clear, for example, that our board members think you should recognise an asset or liability. It's not clear how they think that you should measure that asset or liability either. So we've got a lot of issues that we need to deal with as a board, and what we've decided to do is to continue on with this project as fast as we can.
I mean, the board papers for this week, which are publicly available, include a staff summary of the responses that we received to the exposure draft. And whilst those jurisdictions that currently use this type of accounting, many of the preparers were particularly supportive of the approach that we had proposed, I think looking at other constituents right across the world, as Alan said, the views were quite divided. One thing we did think about was putting out some sort of interim guidance. We've used that once or twice before. I think we decided that that wasn't a good idea, and that would really distract us and probably take quite a long time anyway, and that what we really need to do is to solve the underlying fundamental problems. So we're going to continue with that to really come up with a high quality sustainable solution to this.
Yeah, and we've asked the staff to have a look at this, to come back in September with some papers.
All right, that's useful, thank you. Perhaps we could move on to financial instruments accounting. There's a lot of interest in this subject, the replacement of IAS 39 with IFRS 9. The first part of that work is now complete. Steve, perhaps you could talk a little bit about hedge accounting.
Yeah, the first issue that we looked at was the question of the mechanics of hedge accounting, and in particular, a tentative decision that the board took some months ago that we would apply the cash flow hedge accounting mechanics to so-called fair value hedges. Now, cash flow hedge accounting mechanics are where the gain or loss on the hedging instrument, those gains or losses are recorded in other comprehensive income, and then at a later point they are reclassified to net income when the hedged transaction affects net income. Now, at the moment, this is applied to cash flow hedges and is fairly well accepted. For fair value hedges, though, we don't apply that methodology. We mark both the hedging instrument and the hedged item through the income statement. So the proposal to change to the cash flow hedge accounting mechanics was quite a significant step. The advantage of it is that it is arguably simpler, that it's more consistent with the cash flow hedge accounting, and it avoids doing adjustments in the balance sheet, which sort of are partial fair value measures for the hedged item. So if you hedge an instrument for one specific risk exposure, you would then be marking that hedged item for that particular component of its fair value change, but not the whole fair value change. So this was something that was raised in the discussion paper. We had quite a lot of support for it. However, we have spent some time rethinking. There are a number of disadvantages of the approach that we proposed, not least that it can arguably create distortions to shareholders' equity, can distort certain ratios. We spent quite a lot of time with outreach activities discussing this issue with a number of interested parties, particularly some companies for whom it would quite significantly affect their financial statements, and they've argued to us that it would make them less clear. So we've, as I said, we've rethought, and the board's tentative approach now is to not go back to what we had before, but to include a valuation adjustment in the balance sheet in respect of the hedged item. So we're not changing the measurement of the hedged item itself, but including a separate valuation adjustment. So this is an approach that we believe is responsive to the issues that have arisen. We still think it's a simplification and improvement on what we have, but it's not quite the same as the initial tentative decision taken. There were a number of other methods that were discussed. We've got some way to go yet before we put out an exposure draft on this, and certainly when we do, we'll be specifically asking a question on that particular issue. We had some discussions on other issues to do with hedge accounting, hedging of net positions, and that's ongoing. We haven't come to final decisions about those aspects of hedge accounting, but they were useful discussions that are pushing us further towards coming up with a revised hedge accounting model.
Staying with financial instruments, Alan, perhaps you could talk a little bit about derecognition and IAS 32.
Yeah, well, these are interesting topics because in both cases, I think we got fairly good feedback over the financial crisis about how well our standards did work. Derecognition, we'd had out as an exposure draft to produce a revised model for that, and we had that, a core model plus an alternative. And we had only limited support for what we had proposed, and what we did get strong support for was improving our disclosure requirements. So what we've decided to do is to spend more time reflecting on the derecognition model itself and to assess how well the new model in the US GAAP, for example, is going to bed down. And in the interim, we'll bring forward, or in other words, accelerate our disclosure requirements. So the board had a look at, reviewed the decisions they'd made in March in relation to disclosures, and basically confirmed that the new disclosures we're going to put in place will be a significant improvement. So the staff are in the process of putting together the finalisations for the disclosure model. And again, the paper on the on our website with the shows the paper considered by the board. It's got all the disclosures in there.
Okay.
The second one was financial instruments with the characteristics of equity or liability equity definition. And again, it's widely held perception that IAS 32 isn't working too badly. Now, what we did try to do is put together an improved exposure draft or proposal for a standard that basically simplifies the way I think IAS 32 is expressed. It was developed quite a long time ago, and some perceived it to be effective but a little bit clumsy in the way it's put together. Now, we've received quite a bit of feedback from external reviewers because we go through an external review process where we have targeted or selected reviewers from different sectors who provide us with very specific feedback. This before we go with the general public comments. And some of the feedback has indicated that they want us to think more carefully about perhaps how we've expressed it, and we've got to go back to, I think, engage with them a little bit more to learn more about what their concerns were. So what we're doing is that we're going to be looking at our proposal as it, we've been developing it. At the same time, we're going to see whether it would be more efficient and effective simply to basically retain IAS 32 but potentially make some small changes or improvements in there. So at the moment, the project is really going through just a reflection phase, and we're looking at probably early in the new year before we come back with that.
Okay. Steve, perhaps you can talk a little bit about the discussions on both impairment and liabilities.
Well, these are two exposure drafts that we issued some months ago, and the technical staff provided the board with a summary of the comments that have been received, the so-called comment letter analysis. The fair value option, this is really completing the second stage of our deliberations on recognition and measurement of financial instruments. You recall that IFRS 9 was issued some time ago dealing with the assets in that sense. The liabilities we excluded at the time. We have proposed that we're not going to make substantive changes on the liability side. Most of the issues that have arisen on recognition and measurement seem to concern assets. However, there was one particular problem that many people have identified over the last year or so, and that is the so-called own credit effect in the income statement. If you apply the fair value option and measure liabilities at fair value, then the change in fair value that goes to the income statement at the moment is the full change. Many have argued that including the own credit effect in that really distorts the income statement, produces counterintuitive effects. The board agreed and issued an exposure draft proposing a limited change in respect to the fair value option, notably to take that portion of the fair value change that relates to own credit to other comprehensive income. So we published the ED on that, and as I say, the staff summarised the comments on that. Quite a lot of support overall for the basic philosophy that we're proposing, some disagreement about some of the details that are involved. The amortised cost and impairment ED, that has been out for a pretty lengthy comment period, 8 months. We issued that last year. The reason for the long comment period is that we wanted to spend quite a lot of time looking at the operational concerns. We proposed quite a new model, the so-called expected cash flow model. Quite operationally challenging for banks. We recognised that at the time. We wanted to spend some time getting input. We set up an expert advisory panel to help us do that. And that has certainly been very useful. But so we received a lot of comment letters on that. Again, quite supportive on the whole of the approach that we're taking in general terms, but many, many concerns about operational issues and some specific aspects from a conceptual perspective. So the technical staff will be working on this over the coming weeks, and the board will start re-deliberating both of these two topics in earnest in a month or so's time.
Well, in fact, probably a little bit earlier, because I think we have on the agenda for next week. We've got another shorter meeting next week for three or four hours, and that's next Tuesday.
I forgot about our additional meeting in August, yes, so next week.
Okay. Alan, perhaps you could just run through any other projects that you would like to point out that were discussed during the board week.
Yeah, one in particular I think that some jurisdictions will be particularly interested in is income taxes. We did have an exposure draft out a year or so ago to basically rewrite IS 12, which is their income taxes standard. And it didn't receive strong support at all. But within the whole project is you don't want to simply stop a project because it doesn't get overwhelming support for the package as a whole. Included in that were several issues that really we do need to address. And one of them relates to investment properties and other types of properties where there's a capital gains tax is zero. In other words, there is no capital gains tax in some jurisdictions. So countries like Hong Kong, for example, and New Zealand, where they don't have any capital gains tax, they perceive that there's quite an anomaly in the way they have to report a deferred tax liability for something they'll never have to pay. And so what the board is proposing is to put an exposure draft out in the next month, basically to introduce an exception to the measurement principle in IS 12. What it will allow people to do is if they have in these investment properties that they're measuring at fair value, they won't have to account for the deferred tax component. And the proposal is actually to extend that not just from beyond IS 40 and extend it onto IS 16, property, plant and equipment for those using marking to fair value, and also IS 38, the intangible asset standard. So we expect to put that out for about a two-month comment period so that we can have that available early in the new year.
Alan, there were other issues, weren't there, to do with income taxes that we had identified previously, and one particular relating to uncertain tax positions. So we're not dealing with that at this stage, but we are going to come back to that, aren't we?
Yeah, absolutely. This one was put through because it was such a constrained topic. And we resolved it, in our view, to a satisfactory level, whereas the uncertain tax position, I think, is going to take a lot more to get through that topic. So rather than hold everything back, we decided to feed this one out at this time.
Okay. Anything else that you'd like to cover?
I think if ISB update should be out in a couple of days, and people can go back and look on the website. They may be interested to look at the annual improvements. We looked at four or five proposals to put some small improvements out and then rejected a couple. Consolidation, for example, we had a look at the disclosures relating to consolidation, and the staff were given permission by the board to go away and start to finalise and do the final drafting for three final standards, one for the core replacement of IS 27 that deals with the definition of control, another one, I should say it's an exposure draft as opposed to final for investment companies, and then also finalising disclosures in relation to those areas that proved problematic over the credit crisis, relation to sort of structured entities where people perhaps have securitisation type vehicles, and we're going to improve the quality of the disclosures with that. It's very much in line with where international thinking has been on that sort of area. Conceptual framework was back on the agenda this month, so there's a small paper on measurement that people may be interested to look at, and we also looked at an issue to do with hyperinflation, of all things. The board's decided not to go ahead with the proposal, but which was an amendment to IS 29, but to ask the staff to look at the issue more broadly to see whether we can actually get a slightly narrower change that only affects IFRS 1, which is our first time adoption, rather than looking at IS 29.
Okay, thank you. So a lot of subjects discussed during board week. A couple of things just to flag over the coming weeks. Obviously there is ongoing project outreach for the projects that are out for public comment. So we're going to be publishing the insurance exposure draft in the next week or so, with leases scheduled for mid-August.
Yeah, insurance should be the end of this week, so we're looking at basically 30th of July.
Right.
And the leases will be the week of the 9th, okay. So around about the 12th of August.
We have the IFRS conference taking place in Tokyo. I believe it's the 28th, 29th of July. One other thing to flag, we've spent a lot of time reformatting the project homepages. So each of the projects on the active agenda has its own homepage on the website. And we've tried to reformat that information presented in a more consistent and a clearer way. So very much welcome any feedback that you have on that. The next board meeting is scheduled for
next Tuesday. It's a smaller meeting. It's going to be 3 to 4 hours. We don't normally meet during August, but we have a meeting on the 3rd, and we have another one in the last week of August. I think it's the 23rd of August, again for about 3 to 4 hours. And at the moment, the two topics that we'll be discussing will be hedge accounting and impairment.
Okay.
So they're the main ones. And then we're back on track for September again. Perhaps one thing just to flag in terms of longer-term planning, normally our board travels across to Norwalk for a joint meeting in October with the FASB, but we've been reviewing our work plan and how our deliberations will be panning out. We won't be travelling in October this time. The FASB will come to London for our regular board week in October, and the ISB will travel to Norwalk in November.
Okay. Well, thanks to Steve and to Alan for that wrap-up. The final thing for me is just to give you the obligatory health warning that these are the personal views of the presenters and do not necessarily represent those of the IASB. The only official summary of the board meeting is provided by IASB Update, which will be available on the website shortly. Thank you for your time and good afternoon.